The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand. Join the Hyundai revolution. The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Everyone's talking about the revolution driven by Hyundai, Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back to the programme. Now competition time. This week's lyrics competition is for a pair of tickets to see the legendary Tom Jones strutting his stuff live at the Marquee in Cork on the 19th of Jones. Tom Jones is still seriously on the go. Anyway, I will read out some sets of lyrics from his back catalogue, and when you hear the final set of lyrics, you can text your answer to 51551. So here we go with Ivra Hayne. The old house is still standing, though the paint is cracked and dry, and there's that old oak tree that I used to play on. OK, so that's the first one of those for tickets for Tom Jones. Now we are going to move on to another matter that is causing some concern for some people in the country at the moment. It's basically a very good thing that we have signed up to what's called the Hague Convention in terms of adopting children. However, it would appear that one of the consequences was one that wasn't anticipated, which is that remarkably few are taking place now since we so did. And the Irish Times journalist Rosita Boland wrote about the story some weeks ago on the number of post-Hague adoptions. It's a complex situation, so to talk about it and tell their own stories, I'm joined by Rosita Boland, the Irish Mail on Sunday writer Alison O'Reilly, and the author Abigail Riley, on what exactly has happened. If you could go back over the ground for me, Rosita, and explain what has happened. We were 17 years negotiating the Hague Convention.
Well, it was 17 years before Ireland ratified the Hague Convention, and 3 weeks ago in the Irish Times I broke the story that there had been only 11 adoptions to people with post-Hague declarations. And what that means is...
What do you mean by a declaration?
What I mean by a declaration is that in order to adopt in Ireland, you engage on the process with the HSE. It takes a number of years. It's very lengthy. It's very thorough. You attend preparation classes. You have one-on-one assessments. The social workers interview guardians and referees. And it's very lengthy, very thorough. And there's it goes on for a very long time and there's a lot of paperwork.
How long did it go on for you?
I started in 2006. I got my declaration in September 2011, which is 1 year.
That's after, 5 years.
Yes, and it was 1 year after Ireland ratified the Hague Convention. So I'm now in the process more than 8 years, and the declaration lasts for 2 years, and you can apply for an extension of 1 year. So mine is up in September, and this weekend I'm sitting down with a stack of paperwork to start the process to go through for to apply for another assessment and another declaration.
It seems extraordinary. Tell me about the assessment. What are you assessed on? What's it like being assessed?
Well, you're assessed for your suitability to adopt a child. And
yeah, but how is that done, if you know what I mean?
It's a very long process. First of all, you obviously have to submit lots of things like your medical records, your financial records. People have to write character references for you. And then you're invited in my case, I waited nearly 3 years to be called to the Dublin HSE group preparation classes, and they go on for a number of weeks. They're mandatory to attend. They're about 4 hours every fortnight. I did this some years ago now.
And what are you doing?
Your social workers are explaining to you some of the challenges that you may face as an adoptive parent, and it's a very, very long process. And I can tell you that of the 16 people in my group, there are only 4 of us left now. All the rest have dropped out because they just found it too daunting. And what I mean is by daunting, I mean what has happened, because we would have received post-Hague declarations. And since there has only been 11 adoptions to people like me in the last 3.5 years, some people have just given up because they just can't take the emotional cost anymore.
Right. It's the hope and hope dashed and all of that kind of thing. I come to the technical stuff about the Hague Convention in a minute. Now, let me come to you, Alison. You went through it all. Now, you were successful, but you're going again.
Yes, I just finished my second assessment. So I was pre-Hague. I got my declaration in September 2010, just before.
A declaration declares that you're suitable to be a parent.
Yeah. And I've just finished my second assessment, so my report is being made for a second adoption. Yeah.
And tell me about the first one.
Well, the first one, I applied in 2004 when I was 29, and I got Tam when I was 35.
So that was how long and all?
Nearly 6 years. I got him in May 2011, so I'll have him 3 years this year.
Yeah.
And
how did that all come about?
I just grew up with the idea that I was always going to adopt. It was something that I knew since I was a child. It was going to be part of my life no matter what. And so I...
No matter what?
No matter what, yeah. My children were going to come before having a partner. It was just something I always wanted to do. I grew up in a house where my parents were very open to, you know, if I had any friends who were in difficulty, they were allowed to stay over. My parents would have been very much like that and very open to that.
Yeah.
And I suppose, there was always my father was always watching the documentaries about Africa. And I suppose I just grew up with a love for it. And in 1980, the Vietnamese boat people came to Drogheda. I'm from Drogheda. And one of the families, one of the girls was in my class. And I remember just thinking, I would love to have these people live with me. I couldn't understand it myself at that age, but it was just something I knew I would do.
Right.
When I grew up.
So tell me how you got your declaration first time around.
Yeah.
And then how did you get Tam? Tam is the name of your son.
Tam, yeah. Well, I was in the system for nearly 5 years. It takes, as Rosita said, about a year of the assessments. And it's an investigation of your entire life, family, friends, everything that you've ever done is put into paper.
And you already had a child of your own.
Yes, I have a 12-year-old son, Alva. So I was a lone parent anyway, and I'd explained to him from the age of 3 this is what we were going to do. And I sent off my pack to Ethiopia because I had been to Ethiopia 3 or 4 times on holidays, and Vietnam would have been my original choice, but I chose Ethiopia having been there a couple of times. And I just got my pack in after talking to another woman who's from Rahini. She's not far from me, and she would have been quite helpful towards my own adoption because she'd adopted 2 children. And I just found that it was very transparent, Ethiopia, very easy to deal with. You don't deal with an agency, you have a facilitator. I paid €1,000 for legal fees, and that was it. And, Ethiopia would be one of the very few countries that actually do give a damn about their kids and where they go. And you write post-placement reports until they're 18.
Do you?
After
right.
you have yeah. the child. And I went out, I sent my pack out to a facilitator who accepted me, and he dealt with the Irish Embassy out there, and they accepted me, and they were very hands-on, the Irish Embassy in Ethiopia. And we got a warning from the Adoption Authority of Ireland not to spend any more than €1,000 on your fees in Ethiopia, and that this is what the Ministry of Women and Children would have wanted as well. So I got my pack accepted, and I didn't actually realise that I was the last in a list of 18 people to adopt from Ethiopia pre-Hague. And so I sent it out in October, and then in March I got Tamaru's details, and then I was in Ethiopia in May the 18th, 2011, and I adopted him on the 21st, and it was just so, so emotional. So it was very, very quick once I got my pack in, and Ethiopia wasn't open to loan applicants at the time, but I just wasn't listening to anybody. I just went out and I said, right, it's up to the judge on the day. And I think just because we were the last and they knew that the country was closing off, that she did it at her own discretion and let
right.
me through.
And he's coming along really now.
Yes.
Now, I gather the effect of this means that you're, Abigail, you're thinking of actually leaving Ireland.
Yes. It's, again, I mean, like Alison, adoption is something that I've always wanted to do. It's something I've always wanted to look into. And so myself and my husband would have made the first investigations into that in 2007. Mm-hmm. Now, we knew at that stage that Hague was on the horizon. I think people have been knowing that Hague's on the horizon for
17 years.
A long time. But we knew we were going to be in sort of the last group of people going through the initial stages of the process pre-Hague.
Right.
But, I mean, basically...
And then you had also been having IVF.
We had difficulties conceiving.
Right.
But I didn't want to actually go forward to IVF.
Right.
Adoption seemed like a far more natural way to proceed for us. As I say, it was something I'd always felt passionate about. And if there was a child that desperately needed a family out there somewhere, then it seemed like a better way of going forward.
Right. But and what happened? You went forward. How did you find the whole business, the vetting business, for want of a better word?
Again, we pulled out of the system fairly early on because it became clear that post-Hague, things were grinding to a halt. And so we decided not to go forward with the full vetting process, because what was the point in putting ourselves through that when...
Yeah, because I gathered that I remember many years ago talking to people who were going through the process, and it was quite invasive in ways that somehow... At the time, you thought, my goodness, does it have to be that invasive? What do you think, Rosita?
Well, I think that the point is really not whether it's considered invasive or not. This is the state system. This is what you have to go through to get the legal document. And I don't have any problem with the assessment process because, you know, this is all about the best interests of the child. But what I just cannot fathom is... It's sort of so there is a huge cost to the state. There was at least 150 hours invested in my case with all the time I had with social workers. And now there will be more time spent by the HSE on my case. There are currently 537 declarations that are live, and most of those are for couples. So that's at least 1,000 people who are currently affected. Then there's people like Abigail and her husband who've dropped out of the system. And this weekend, as I said, I'm going to be going through the stack of paperwork again to initiate the process to go for another assessment and another declaration.
Why has Hague had such a profound effect?
But I wouldn't mind all of that I wasn't looking at this figure of only 11 adoptions to people like me with post-Hague declarations.
Now, you say that the Ethiopians are very good and they care about their kids. Yeah. Is Ethiopia still open?
No, Ethiopia closed. I was one of the last 18 to adopt that year.
Yeah, but have they not signed up to Hague?
No, they can't afford to sign up to Hague. And I think that's one of the biggest problems. Well, they're a country of 87 million, you know, with 80% that are in abject poverty. And there's 5 million orphans in Ethiopia. And when I was there, there was people travelling from all over the world to adopt, you know. And
why can't they afford to sign up? What's involved for them to sign up?
Well, I know that there is money in relation to signing up to Hague, and you have to have certain standards and you have to be able to agree to them, and there's a lot of legal framework. So what Ireland needs to do is to help Ethiopia sign up to a bilateral agreement, and that's what the minister should be looking at. I'm writing about it in the paper tomorrow, in the Mail on Sunday, but it definitely is back on the horizon. But I think, you see,
I saw in the paper this morning that Geoffrey Shannon and I can't remember who's the company,
is in Haiti. Yeah, and they were the first country. We were the first country to go and meet Haiti after they ratified the Hague Convention on Tuesday. But you see, you have to look at like Ethiopia, Vietnam and Russia were the three main countries where people were adopting from a few years ago. And then there was the whole disaster with Vietnam, and it wasn't, the bilateral agreement wasn't renewed with Barry Andrews, the former minister for
Why not?
he just didn't get around to doing it. I mean, it was diabolical what happened there. And so, you know, the Minister Fitzgerald came into power and she had to try and sort that out. And Vietnam got reopened. And OK, it's very slow, but they are expecting declarations from Vietnam this year. And then Russia and Ethiopia closed off last year. And you see, I know that things could definitely be quicker. And I've no problem with the assessment process because you are dealing with children here.
Yes.
And I've written about illegal adoptions in Ireland now for the last few years. And you can look at the disasters of our own illegal adoptions here and people being left in trauma.
Absolutely.
Because it was just pushed through the system really fast.
Yeah, but you the other thing I noticed is you paid $1,000. I saw costs of up to $10,000.
That's agency fees. You see, I don't agree with the agencies at all. And under Hague, you have to have an agency in certain countries. And Ethiopia, I didn't have an agency. I had a facilitator. It's like a do-it-yourself adoption. You go out there and you know every step of the way. And like, for instance, if a child is abandoned, you know, there has to be a police report to show that you searched for that parent for 2 to 3 months. Then you moved up in the system and you're searched again for another 3 to 6 months. And it takes a very, very long time. And in the meantime, there's 5 million orphans in Ethiopia waiting to be adopted, and we should certainly absolutely have Ethiopia again, because I just feel that it was so transparent. They really do care about their kids,
right?
You know, as I said, I'm doing post placement reports now till Tam is 18, and that's very important to show, you know, how your child is doing,
right,
as a result of
do
being adopted.
Do you know where his mother is, or did...
I've no birth history at all. I've no birth history at all. But I think for all their faults and failings, the HSE do a very good intercountry adoption course,
right?
And I felt adequately prepared because I had difficulties with Tam, you know, and that's another thing. There's no post adoptive services. I mean, there's, you know, there's very few post adoptive services. My son suffered with chronic night terrors when he came back, and they're quite frightened, you know. People have this idea that...
Well, I presume for a little child. Well, mind you, what age was he?
He was 13 months, but I mean, that's all he knew. People think you're brilliant for going out there to adopt, and that's not how I see it at all. As far as I'm concerned, I'm lucky to have him, you
know? But I presume at 13 months... He might never have seen a white face.
Never saw white. He was afraid of the wind. He was afraid of the Hoover. He was afraid of dogs. You know, he didn't sleep for a year and a half with night terrors. And, you know, you really do have to consider the best interests of the child.
OK, let me go to somebody else who is from Wicklow. And you started along this journey 7 years ago, Beth.
Hi, how are
you? How are
you? That's right. My story mirrors your guest. We would have started again. We applied to adopt in 2007. At that time, there was a very high interest in international adoption. So we filled out all the paperwork and we waited and waited, again to be called to the preparation course that your other guests have spoken about.
Yeah.
Our paperwork is now currently out of date. So we spent 7 years, you know, compiling financial reports, you know, again, our referees being interviewed. We had, you know, substantial interviews with our own social worker.
Why does it have to be redone if you're the same person that was done in the first place?
I really don't know is the answer. Now our circumstances have changed. You know, and that's absolutely fine. I have, you know, no problem with having to be reassessed and, you know...
Because you, in the meantime, you gave IVF one more shot. You had done it how many times?
We did it 6 times. And I have a gorgeous little girl lying on my lap here.
Right. Well, I can understand if your circumstances have changed, you'd have to double check.
And that's, listen, again, and I'll mirror yet again what the other guests have said. The assessment process, I have no problem with it, I think. And I know our social worker did a fantastic job with us. And I commend the process from the HSC. It's just when you receive your declaration. Currently, we had sent our pack to Bulgaria, which was a Hague-compliant country, and they were sending their children out for adoption. We were on the waiting list in Bulgaria for 3 years, along with, you know, a couple of hundred other applicants.
Right.
We have pulled out of Bulgaria.
Why?
Because there has been, I think, one, possibly two adoptions finalised from Bulgaria in the last 4 years.
Right, OK. So in other words, you're dealing with a no-win situation.
Absolutely.
Just two things, yeah. I want to say. One of the things that really surprised me was that the biggest number of adoptions was with the US. I thought that was quite extraordinary. I don't know why I thought it was extraordinary, but I thought it was extraordinary.
Well, I think what's happening with America at the moment, and I think where they're different, a lot of the other countries are different, we have written the Hague Convention into our law, whereas some other countries have, you know, signed up to the Hague Convention and are using it as a best practice.
Yeah.
You know, rather than
part of the law.
Part of the law.
Yeah. And America, I mean, just very briefly, because I'm going to have to leave it here for the moment, but what is the Hague Convention? It was devised and designed to protect the interests of the child. What is it that's so awful about it?
It's red tape, it's political correctness, it's, you know, all of the above.
Right.
On paper, it is a fantastic piece of legislation because it strives to stop child trafficking. However, in practice, it has not worked, certainly not worked here in Ireland. As Rosita said, there are currently almost 1,000 families waiting to adopt.
Right.
That means that there's 1,000 children out there with no parents.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing about it is the needs of the kids are so great, kind of a worldwide, and the needs of the parents too, because it means so much to somebody to have their own family. Anyway, we're going to have to leave it there, folks. My thanks to Alison O'Reilly, Rosita Boland, Abigail Riley, and on the phone, Beth Merriman, and good luck with it. Good luck with it.
1850 715 150.